Radio Gorgeous.
Adele Waldman.
We're here talking about the love affairs of Nathaniel P., your debut novel.
Yes, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
And tell us about Nathaniel P. So introduce him.
Nathaniel P. is a writer in Brooklyn in his early 30s, and he, for years in his 20s, he was a struggling freelance writer without too much money and kind of not so popular with women. But as in the course of his 20s, he became more professionally successful and also at the same time, a little more popular with women. And this has led to new problems for him. He kind of has a bad habit of pissing off the women he dates, and he doesn't really know why or how to stop. He's not out to hurt women, but he has a number of exes who are not super fond of him. And he also has, when the book opens, he has his own novel that's about to come out in about 6 months or so. So things are kind of taking off for him professionally. And he's got this woman problem going.
Yes. We meet various women. They sort of overlap in his life. There's a platonic friend, Orit, or Orit.
I say Orit, but the truth is it's kind of a made-up name. And say it however you want.
And there's girlfriends. It's sort of like a Christmas carol, you know, ghosts of girlfriends past,
right.
present and future that
exactly,
we get to meet.
Exactly.
And see how he is. It really struck me as if also Brooklyn was a character in the book.
It's interesting because when I set out to write the book, I was really interested in writing about relationships and men and women and gender and certain dynamics that I think are universal in dating that I think are not specific to Brooklyn or the U.S. But I had to set the book someplace, and I am a writer who lives in Brooklyn, so it was easy to just set it in the place that I knew. But in the course of writing the book, I feel the same way. I feel like Brooklyn came alive for me. It became very fun to try to make the setting as vivid as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it struck me as completely familiar to me of not, as you say, not only the New York dating scene, but London dating scene or dating anywhere. And how we almost don't know, even with all these new rules and all these, you know, feminism and we have no idea what we're doing.
Right. I mean, I think in some ways, especially because of these new rules, because I think we don't have any kind of shared understanding that what we owe to people, like after we've gone out with them once or after we've slept with them once. And I think in that way, I have sympathy for Nate, my main character, and I have plenty of criticisms of him as well. But I don't think that we have any sort of agreement about what happens if you go out with a person once or twice and you sleep together and one of the people isn't interested. Is that, have you violated some implicit commitment because you've slept together, or does sleeping together not mean anything these days? And I think if you ask 10 people, you'd get 10 different answers.
And in the same way that, I mean, Alan de Button is a big fan of yours, but in the same way that it strikes me as universal, it also strikes me as kind of how F. Scott Fitzgerald's books were viewed at the time. They were sort of used not as dating manuals, but were like, oh, that's how we do it. Or that's what they were thinking. Or that's how men think about women.
Right.
And it's a similar thing because you're writing about now and dating. And why did you choose to write from Nate's point of view?
So it's so interesting to me. I'm now in my mid to late 30s, actually. But when I was in my 20s, I wanted to write about dating, about my experiences and experiences that my friends had, because I feel like this was our lives. It was what we struggled with. And having experiences that were painful and confusing, sometimes fun. But I felt that there weren't too many books about dating that weren't, I hate to use the term, but chick lit or fun, but escapist. And I'm a big fan of 19th century novels. And I wanted to read kind of a serious novel about the kinds of things that I was struggling with. And I didn't quite see the novel I was looking for. So I tried to write from my own perspective. Unfortunately, it wasn't very good. and I felt like I wrote stuff that was probably of more interest to me, like a journal entry. And then, so I put this on the back burner. And then one day, I was reading a book by a male author, a book about his romantic life, or about the character's romantic life. And this, I had this thought. I said, I think I have more insight into this guy's emotional state and behavior than he does. And which made perfect sense because I spent all these hours in my 20s with my girlfriends analyzing these guys and trying to figure out why.
Agonizing right. over this stuff. Like many, many hours, many bottles of wine, many bar chats.
Exactly. And trying to figure out like what is he thinking when he does this. And you know that they're not spending nearly as much time thinking about even their own behavior. So I felt like it didn't seem like that big of a leap. I'm like, I just think I might have more insight into this guy's mind than he does. And by this point, I was, if not married, soon to be married. But I had this crazy idea. I was like, why don't I write from the male perspective and use this insight I have? And what surprised me is that it seemed a really useful way to write not just about men, but about my own experience. I felt like it worked better than when I tried to write about dating more directly. Mm-hmm. So I sort of hope the book, as much as it is about the male mind, is also about many women's experience dating. Because, yeah I think we've all probably been a Nate, but also been a Hannah.
And an Elisa.
right.
Just to illuminate that, Elisa is the ex-girlfriend who, you know, sort of can't let it go and still, you know, still wants to talk about it. And
right.
I remember doing that.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. I feel like I can relate to every character in mm-hmm. the book. And I'm in many ways critical of Nate, my main character. But then I don't think he's purely a bad guy. I relate to aspects of him. And then the women who, have been all of them too. And in some ways, I kind of wanted to validate that a little bit in the book, that I feel like one of the worst things I felt when I was dating, and when you're in a really painful situation, say, the relationship isn't going well, you sense the guy pulling away, it makes you crazy and insecure, and then you behave in certain ways that make you feel even crazier and more insecure. And I kind of wanted to explore that cycle in my book and kind of validate the women that it's not her. She's responding to the guy's behavior. And obviously, this is not the way she is always and forever. It's in a particular situation. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was important to me.
Yeah. Because I think why there's been such a tremendous critical response to it is one, because any great novel feels like it's true. You know, it feels very true in some way, as well as being entertaining and et cetera. But there's something very true about it and almost inevitable where it's going as you're reading it. But also because you do not shy away from the complexities that a person in this population would feel, which is educated, you know, highly educated, mm-hmm. smarty pants writer, not in the day job.
Right.
So, you know, okay. So in a particular enclave, which is also translatable, but really you don't shy away from the complexities of the availability of porn, what that does to a relationship, the, you know, just the availability of information.
I'm always struck by how much is universal, the human experience. So I read all these 19th century novels, and I feel like in a lot of ways we have the same types of issues, that Nate in some ways is not unlike Henry Crawford in Mansfield Park, mm-hmm. who is another guy with commitment issues. Maybe Henry is a little more charming and scheming than Nate is, mm-hmm. but they both sort of leave a trail of tears in their own way. But as much as I think that's true, I also think we're all products of a particular time and place, and it's just important to get those details right. So for me, the internet porn thing, you mentioned it, so I can't help thinking about it. That was one of the most interesting things to write about as a woman, because I just had to think about it in a very different way and sort of imagine Nate's relationship to it. And I had a little help from a guy friend of mine. He made a comment once years ago I thought was so funny, and it stuck with me, that my husband is a writer too, and he goes to a writing space to work most days. It's sort of a shared office space. So my friend Lou, he's a friend from high school, he says to me one day, he says, "You know the reason that Evan goes to this writing space to work, don't you?" And I was like, yeah, he likes to get out of the house. He likes to have some place to go. It feels like an office. And Lou's like, no. He goes, so we can't look at porn all day. And yeah. And he wouldn't get work done. And I, like a light bulb went off in my head. I was like, I have to remember this. This is, as a woman, this never would have occurred to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's true for my husband, Evan, but... But it's like,
too scared to ask. Is it because you're trying to, or you want to get writing? Right? Never mind.
Exactly.
The result is.
But it was just one of those little things of like, I have to remember this when writing a book from the male perspective, because there are certain aspects of Nate's experience, they're going to be different from mine. He's mm-hmm. going to have a different relationship.
And it is, I that's why I really did enjoy that sort of really incredibly observed aspect of the novel, which in sometimes to be in Nate's head is almost claustrophobic in there.
Right.
But yeah, it's great.
RadioGorgeous.com.
Tell me about that. Were you living in Nate's head?
Yes. I mean, at times it was overwhelming. Another thing that would come up to bring my husband into it again is that I'd be in my little office working away on the novel, and at moments I would just get really disgusted by what I was writing and kind of angry. And then I get mad at my husband just for being a man. Because I just felt like, oh, he must think similar things to Nate. Yes. And my poor husband, you know, I'd come out of the office and I'd just be like, ugh, just be kind of pissy with him. And he'd be like, this is so unfair. You're mad at me for things you made your imaginary character do in your imaginary world.
Which is even also, it's even one step removed from, like, you know, if you have a dream about your husband and you did something crummy in the dream, you're right. Just like, ooh, you know, I'm mad at you for the rest of the day. It's like, I wasn't even, you know, it's not even me, it's Nate. I'm not the dick, he's the dick.
Right. But yeah, totally. I mean, some of it was just troubling. And there's just a way, like, when I would be in Nate's head and imagine the world from his perspective, there's a way of seeing women that is just very, very different than I, as Adele, go about thinking in my regular life. And and it's weird. It was strange to me how easy it was to sort of put on my Nate mindset and just get into it. But then afterwards, I just kind of want to take a shower.
Yeah, exactly. I feel dirty. I feel dirty inside Nate. So can we get now to Alan de Button, who, after it was published here in August, read it and was just a huge fan, and then got in touch with you.
Yeah, which was amazing for me. I've read The Romantic Movement, which I think was his first novel, when I was in my early 20s, and if it was not his first novel, if I'm getting mixed up, it was definitely the first novel of his that I read. And it blew me away. And that one is from the perspective of a woman character, and it follows her through a relationship. And the narrator is almost a character in that book. It's like there's this voice of, I guess, Alain de Botton, but sort of analyzing her feelings and what she's doing throughout the relationship. And I just thought it was brilliant. And I felt like I learned so much about myself from the book and about dating. So then, you know, I've been a fan of his ever since. And when I got his email, it just blew me away. I kept thinking to myself, too, that it meant so much to me now, but also if I could have gone back to tell my 22 or 23-year-old self, one day you're going to get this note from Alain de Botton about your book, I feel like I would have saved myself years of agony of just wondering, am I ever going to write a novel? Will it ever get published? And so that was amazing. And
yeah, but that's part of the butterfly moment. Like if you know, that Christmas wasn't hard to get out of, you wouldn't get the butterfly.
Exactly.
You'd see this mushy old thing. You know?
Right.
So,
right.
So maybe that was part of the hardship you had to go through in order
to
squeeze it out of you.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah. No, of course.
Tell me about the process of writing a book.
So what I did for this novel, this is my first published novel, but it's the second novel I've written. And I wrote the first novel when I was 29, within a year, which is amazing because it took me 5 years to write this one. But perhaps it's related to the fact that one didn't get published.
So it was extra 4 years.
Right. I definitely went back and did a lot of revising with this one. But I did learn a lot from from writing the first one. At the time, I was very disappointed it didn't get published. Now, honestly, I feel lucky. I feel like I learned a lot, and I'm so glad it's in a drawer and the world doesn't have to see it. Mm. But I learned that I could write a novel with a beginning, a middle, and an end, which was not something I knew in my 20s. I had aspirations of novel writing, but I never got very far. And
yeah, you get about 40 to 60 pages in, you're like, I don't know where this is going. I don't even like these people anymore. I don't know anything about them. Like,
yeah. Right, exactly.
You sort of peter out.
Exactly. Yeah. So knowing that I could do it and that I enjoyed doing it was huge. It gave me incentive to spend these 5 years on this one. So what I did, I was, after that one didn't get published, I was disappointed. I was kind of depressed about it for about a year. And then with the encouragement of my boyfriend at the time, now my husband, he was like, all right, you got to stop sort of moaning about this and just write another. So I finally did. And at that point, I was working as a journalist, but a freelance journalist. But that sometimes means it's like having 10 jobs instead of one, mm-hmm. just as you mentioned, all the deadlines and
the reading that goes into the writing.
Right, right. To write book reviews. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it boils down to an hourly rate that is so sad. And, but if you enjoy reading the books, like, it's not so bad. And just figuring out how to make a living doing that is so stressful. So after about a year or so of freelancing and trying to write this novel, I just realized I barely made any progress on the novel because I was struggling so much to do all the other writing. And I felt like I was going to have to make a change because if I wanted to be a novelist, not a freelance book reviewer, it wasn't going to make sense to just prioritize all the book reviewing. So I wound up really, really cutting back on the freelancing and working as a tutor to wealthy high school students to pay the bills while working on the novel. And that, it worked out really well. On the one hand, it was actually just an easier way to make a living mm-hmm. than freelancing. I just showed up and I would...
Yeah, so there's less prep and the hourly rate.
That's the hourly
less,
rate.
Less prep, less investment.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Right. There were some initial preps I had to learn as tutoring for the SAT, the test that Americans take to get into college. And, you know, there's some initial prep you do, but then once, God, I just... There's a blue book called the Big Blue SAT book, and I memorized every question in that book after a while. I just do it with my eyes closed because I thought I would maybe be tutoring for a year until I finished the novel. Then 5 years later, I'm still doing it because it took me a long time. Mm-hmm. So I was working as a tutor, and that did give me time to work on the novel, which was great. But it was also kind of a little bit depressing because I was in my 30s and I had no idea if this novel would get published, and at least when I was writing book reviews and stuff, I could feel like, all right, well, I'm producing something that's in the world. And as the years went by and I was just tutoring and working on a Microsoft Word document, I definitely felt some anxiety. And then I finished a draft took about 3 years, and then I got an agent, and then things started looking up.
Things started picking up from there. Yeah. And then there was a reason you're like, oh, I have an agent. You know? Like, I'm a real person now. I'm an actual writer.
Right.
They have an agent.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I wound up revising for a while after I signed with my agent, before we sent it to publisher. So there was this lag time between getting an agent and having a publisher, but just psychologically, I felt a lot better.
Yeah, you were on the road.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which has led you to London and has led you to an event with Alain de Botton, in which you will be discussing the purpose of a novel, whether it's entertainment or edification. What are your thoughts?
Right. Well, so I, as I mentioned, I really like a lot of 19th century fiction. And one of the reasons I like it is because I think it's so analytical about character. So I guess I mentioned Jane Austen, George Eliot, who is another big one for me. But and I do feel like fiction of that sort has a purpose. There's a lot you can learn from it about people and sort of morals and ethics and how to behave and thinking about the effect of your actions on others. That said, I would not go as far as Alain de Botton in, I think at this moment, in thinking that fiction should primarily have a moral purpose. And it's been interesting to debate this over email because I think sort of fiction with a moral gets a bad name, that I think today we tend to think something that has a moral is didactic and not quite very sophisticated. But I think that's purely untrue. If you look at Sense and Sensibility, is the most moralistic book ever. It's a big sort of... the whole point of it is to sort of say, be more like Eleanor and less like Marianne. Marianne has sensibility and Eleanor represents sense. But it's also a wonderful novel. It's funny. Mm-hmm. It's sharp. So I don't think having a moral purpose undermines a book's aesthetic integrity necessarily. But I also can't go so far as to say that fiction ought to have a moral purpose. And I don't know. I'm still working out my feelings on this, but
I don't see why I can't have both.
Right.
Entertaining and edification. I spoke to one person and your novel made me think about it. I spoke to another author who says that authors have a moral responsibility to write about the present. And that although, speaking of Jane Austen, the Napoleonic Wars don't show up in it. Mm-hmm. They are of their time. They are so of their time. And that, you know, it sort of leaves something for the future to illuminate life now.
Interesting. Yeah, for me, I've always been interested, myself probably as a reader and a writer, in writing about the present. And I guess when I say as a reader, I'm less of a reader of historical fiction. But for my thinking, I don't have a very well thought out reason other than, as a writer, I just feel like the present is what I know best, and I feel like it's strained every ounce of my intellect to try to analyze it as accurately and fully and fairly as I could. So I can't quite imagine being able to speak as well on any other age. Mm-hmm. It's hard enough to know what's going on now. Yeah, and so I tend, as much as I like fiction that was written in the 19th century, I don't really tend to read books that are written now set in
about
the 19th century.
Yeah.
Although on the other hand, then I think of, you know, I like War and Peace as much as the next person, and that was a historical novel set
at the time. Yeah. Or Hilary Mantel now, you know, writing.
Right.
Will Call and Bringing Up the Bodies.
Right.
But that feels so contemporaneous. It doesn't feel in any way, shape, because it's such a modernly written book. That it doesn't feel like they don't feel like historical novels.
That's true. It's like there's just some great historical novels. I don't want to go so far and say never read any, but
they're okay too. it's all good.
But I'm often impressed by people who can sort of do the research and just recreate another time. Mm. I don't know. It took all I had to write about the time period I know best. As I said, it took 5 years.
Exactly, the people. So what's next for you?
Well, since the book came out, I've just been doing mostly journalism and criticism, which is really, really fun for me because although I wrote book reviews before, I have to say I am now given more leeway to just write what I want, which is really nice. So I wrote about Jane Austen, I wrote about Samuel Richardson and Henry Fielding, 18th century authors who I really like. And those pieces were really fun to write, and I don't know if people would have assign them to me or let me write at such length until now or since the book has come out. So that's been fun. And also for me with fiction, I kind of need a lot of time and mental space to really get absorbed. And it's, I can't quite imagine working on fiction right now because I'm still in this book marketing mode. And it's the exact opposite of the mode that you want to be in when writing fiction, to think about things like, who should we quote on the paperback cover? Just, it's like the wrong set of concerns. I feel like writing fiction, you don't want to think about in some ways the audience at all or who's going to like the book. Mm-hmm. Or to me, that seems like the wrong way of thinking about it. I just feel like I want to write sort of honestly and without regard for that kind of thing. And I can't get in that mindset while also thinking about how can I promote this book? But I have to say I miss it some because for years I had this book and these characters in my head, and that was nice because my personal life's kind of boring by then. I got married, the relationship, other than the occasional fights when I would get mad at my husband
for being
a guy. It was just pretty stable. But writing the book, I got some of the benefits of having a more dramatic personal life, like the drama, the fun, but But then I wasn't really as upset because it wasn't my life.
So they were companionable in some way.
Right. So I do miss it a little bit. I miss always having this fictional world to retreat into. So I feel a little at sea without it. And I kind of look forward to some point, I think in the next few months, just being able to retreat again and hopefully find some new characters to just get immersed.
Spend time
in.
With. Yes. Maybe you like them more, maybe you like them less, but they'll be there.
Right.
All right. So we'll see you in a couple of years.
Sounds
when
great.
When you're back out of the closet. Adele, thank you so much for talking to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you for having me. It's great.
If you'd like to contact us, please email us on info@radiogorgeous or like us on Facebook or become part of our community. Just sign up your name on our website and we'll send an e-letter to you a few times a month.